It's not necessarily related to this week's parsha, but it is interesting to note. It's about the Avos in general. It's interesting to note that you guys, I think most of the people in the room have learned the fourth parak of Brachos, where it says that the tefillos that we say daily are interrelated both to the korbanos, to the sacrifices brought in the Beit HaMikdash, but also to the Avos, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Avram was the one to institute Shacharis, Yitzchak was the one to institute Mincha, and Yaakov was the one to institute Maariv. So I don't remember in what sefer I saw this, but it's interesting to note that the second letter of each of the Avos names corresponds to the tefillah that they instituted. Avraham, Bet, corresponds to
Boker.
Yitzchak Tzadi corresponds to Tzaharaim, noon. And Yaakov, Ayin, corresponds to
Erev.
Just interesting to note that it's the second letter of their name that corresponds to the three tefillos. Why is it that it's the second letter and not the first name? So there I was struggling. The Sefer didn't say why. But I think you have to work with it. When it comes to tefillah, you have to make sure that the tefillah that you daven is a genuine tefillah that is your own personal tefillah, something that you're connected to and that you're sincere about and is yours. So therefore, we first have the first letter representing who the person was, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, each one connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his own real and genuine way, and only then the tefillah comes. Because when you come to approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu in tefillah, you have to bring the true you in order to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Oftentimes we look around, this is a much deeper idea and it really should be developed in the Sikha, but oftentimes we look around, you know, like I wish I could be that guy or that guy. We fantasize about who we can be and who we should be, and we try to be those people instead of being ourselves. When it comes to tefillah, you have to be yourself, come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with your own. Avram came himself, Yitzchak came himself, Yaakov came himself to their own tefillahs. Anyway, like I said, not related to this week's parsha, but I saw it, I thought I would share it with you. Okay, here we go. The life of Sarah, the lifetime of Sarah was 100 years, 20 years, and 7 years. Right, the years of Sarah's life. Period. So Sarah dies at 127. Why does Sarah die at this juncture? Anyone got a chance to learn the first Rashi?
Yeah, it's supposed to be talking today. It's talks so that when she heard about the story of Yitzhak.
Good, good, very good. Sarah heard, as Rashi says, Nismecha mita tzara la'akedas Yitzchak. Juxtaposed, right? There's a connection. It's not just the juxtaposition, but there's a strong connection between the death of Sarah and Akedas Yitzchak. Lafisha al yidei besorata akeda. When she heard about the akeda, she nizdamen bna l'shchita v'kimat shelo nishchat. When her son was about to be slaughtered and he was not, pacha nishmata mimena umesa. Shock was too much to bear, and her neshama left her, and she died. So people ask, why is it that she couldn't bear that? Avraham was able to bear it, right? And Sarah, the Torah tells us, Kol asher tamar alecha Sarah shma b'kola, anything that Sarah tells us, you should listen to her, right? Because she has a greater avodas Hashem than you do. She's a greater neviyah, she's a greater intuition. So why was he able to handle it, and she was not able to handle it? So Rav Sternbuch says the following. He tells an interesting maisa. There's a sefer called Magid Meisharim. The Magid Meisharim was written by none other than Rav Yosef Karo. Rav Yosef Karo is famous because he wrote the Beis Yosef. He wrote the Kesef Mishneh, Perush on the Rambam. He wrote the Shulchan Aruch most famously. And he has this little known sefer called Magid Meisharim. What is the Magid Meisharim? So this is a sefer that of Torahs that he learned from a Magid in his sleep. He would go to sleep, the Magid would come to him and tell him certain Torahs, straight Torahs, Yesharim, Magid Yesharim. And that is the Torah that he wrote in the sefer Magid Meisharim. For whatever reason, it's not as popular as his other works. Although to all of us, we're like, cool, that sounds awesome. I'd like, you know, Michael Rose, quickly down. Do you have Magid Meisharim? So the Magid came to the Beis Yosef and he told him, you're going to have the schus of having an Akedah like Yitzchak to die al Kiddush Hashem. So he was, you know, okay, excited, not excited, whatever it was, but the point is it never happened. He never had the schus to have the Akedah. So later on, he asked the Magid, years later, I suppose, whenever he thought, says, what happened? What happened to the Akedah? So the Magid told him the following lesson, which is applicable over here as well. The Magid told him, in a certain sense, it's much easier to have an Akedah to die al Kiddush Hashem than to live al Kiddush Hashem. It takes a lot more to sacrifice to live for God than it does to die for God. Bilam HaRasha, when he looked at the Jewish people and he, you know, what did he say? Tamod nafshi mos yesharim. Let my soul die like these yesharim, like the Jewish people. What did he say? Let me die like them. He didn't want to live like them because he recognized that to live like them is a tremendous sacrifice. There is a very hard demand to live your life daily as a yid. There is desires that you have, personal desires that you have to tuck away because they get in the way of whatever expectations you have. If you have to daven shachas now, mincha in the middle of the day, that's an almost impossible nisayon for anyone that's in the, that's working in the professional world, and suddenly he has to, he gets a big phone call and they want him to have a meeting at exactly, you know, from one, starting exactly at 1 o'clock, and it's a long meeting, important meeting, it probably won't end till four, and it's the middle of the winter, and that's all of Zman Mincha, and your financial future can depend on that meeting. And you're going to, 1 to 4, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to excuse myself for 20 minutes in the middle. I can't excuse yourself. This is only the biggest deal of your life. You're going to excuse yourself? It's a tremendous sacrifice. It's not easy. So that is what the Magid answered to the Beis Yosef. He says, you are doing an Akedah. By living your life, it's a tremendous Akedah as well. And that is why Sarah was Pacha Nishmata. That's why when she heard that he was going to die, she was like, you know, that's what killed her. The fact that he was going to just give up his life, when that's, you know, that's a piece of cake. What about living his life for HaKadosh Baruch Hu? That is where she was having a difficult time digesting, and therefore that shock of his potential death caused her own death. It's not easy, you know, to put on tefillin. The people that learn daf yomi, whatever it is, we all have our nisyonos on a daily life, and that is it's an akedah. We spoke about it a little bit last week about mesiras nefesh, and it should not be minimized. That is why I'm repeating the idea today, couched in a different pasuk. Okay, the pasuk comes over here and tells us that Avraham came, vayavo Avraham lispod lesarah veliv kosa. Avraham came to eulogize Sarah and to weep over her and to cry. Now, if those of you who have a chumash and have keen sense of observation, will notice that the word veliv kosa is strange. Anyone remember why the word veliv kosa is strange? It's got a small letter in it. It's a small kaf. It's a very small kaf. So why is it that it's a small kaf? So the Mefarshim teach us, the reason why there's a small kaf over here is to teach us that Avraham did not cry too much. So what does that mean, Avraham did not cry too much? That seems a little bit cruel. Certainly, why would the Torah advertise that? You know, like, some guys, unfortunately, you know, we could hear it about some people. Oh, you know. But Baruch Hashem, they had a healthy marriage. Everything was good. They were partners in everything that they did. Avraham megayeres anoshim, Sarah megayeres anoshim. He would take care of the men, she would take care of the women. They were a tag team, inseparable. Two peas in the pod, yin and yang. Peanut butter and jelly. Is that all right to say in the yeshiva? Do we have people that are allergic to peanut butter? In camp, I don't say peanut butter and jelly anymore because... So how could it be that he only cried a little bit? What's that all about? So here we have another important lesson in our Avodas Hashem. Right? The lesson is the following. We say in our davening, Hatzel Satan Milfneinu Umacharenu. We say it at Marib. You know, God, help me combat the Satan, both Milfaneinu, in front of me, or in back of me. What does that mean, in front of me, or in back of me? So in front of me, I understand very well. I'm about to do a mitzvah, and the Satan, the Yetzer Hara, is going to come and tell me, maybe not, you know, the good shoulder, the good angel and the bad angel sitting on your shoulder, and you think to yourself, I don't know, should I do this mitzvah, should I not do this mitzvah? He needs tzedaka, but on the other hand, I need a can of Coke. Should I give the money? Should I not give the money? And then you have that struggle with you. That's Hatzel Satan Melfaneinu. God, help me fight the Satan, combat the Satan in front of me that I'll be able to overcome and do the mitzvah. But what does that mean, Ma'achareinu? What does that mean, Ma'achareinu? So there's important yesod, and I saw it for the first time in the Nesiva Shalom many years ago. The Nesiva Shalom says the following, that even after doing a mitzvah, even after doing a mitzvah, if you regret having done the mitzvah, then you've undermined the mitzvah, and you've lost the potential reward that you might have had for that mitzvah. So for example, let's say a person is learning Shtark in the Beis Medrash, and then people come and they say to him, hey, dude, we're all going out, there's a rager going on. Rager, correct? I just learned that word today. There's a rager going on, right? Speaking of rager, just a plug today during lunch, there's a rager going on in Israel's home. Birthday celebration. 1:30-ish? Leave at 1:45. Right? Yo, man, put away the Gemara, there's a rager going on. It means a party. That's from what I understand. But, I've just become super cool by saying rager. Right? There's a rager going on. So, you say to yourself, oh gosh, no, you know what, I really got a chazer shir, I'm not going to go, I'm going to stay here. And you stay, you think you're in the clear, you think you've earned great olam haba. The next day your friends come to you and they tell you, oh man, you should have been there, it was awesome, it was wicked, you should have seen what was going on, and they tell you about it and you're like, oh man, I wish I would have gone, I knew I should have gone, I'm so upset I didn't go. The minute you say, I'm so upset I didn't go, I wish I could have gone, then you've compromised your schar mitzvah a little bit. Hatzel Satan Melfaneinu, let me have the strength to not only fight it once, but to continuously be happy and peaceful with the decisions that I made. Avraham Avinu sacrificed, or was about to sacrifice, Yitzchak. All right, and that was a tremendous nisayon. And there he goes, ask me after, right? There he goes, and there's the Nisayon, and he's attempting, and he's finally done it, and he's ready to do it, and he did it. And then what happens? Comes along the Shmua to Sarah, and Sarah dies. And at that point, why did Sarah die, of course? Because of the Akedah, the shock of the Akedah. At that point, Avram could have said, man, I can't believe this happened. I regret the Akedah. Right? And he could have been devastated, and he was devastated in a certain sense, over the loss of Sarah. But the Torah comes to stress to us, believe Kosah, he cried only a little bit. He cried for the death of Sarah, but not Chas v'Shalom, for regretting having done the Akedah. That is what the Nesivos Shalom suggests. Word number 3. Okay. Ask me later. Okay. Let's skip a little bit, I guess, to Avram. We could stay in this first Fipsukim. All.
Did you want to catch on here?
No. Just the initial minute or so, it's going to smell when you first turn on this. But that's okay. Okay. Eliezer is sent on a super important mission. Right? And the mission is to find a wife for Yitzchak. Okay? So first Avram calls him in and he says, Vayomer Avram el avdo zkan beiso. Avram turns to his servant, you know, the senior servant, the senior member of his household.
Where is this?
This is Perek Chaf Dalet. Okay? I need you to find a wife for my son. He says, go to my homeland, Artzi Muladati, etc. What does Eliezer answer? Vayomer elav ha'eved, he answers back, Pasuk 8, Ulai lo ta'aveh yisha lelechet acharai. Maybe maybe she won't want to come with me. So what should I do at that point? What if she doesn't want to come? What if she refuses? You're asking me to go far away, find a girl over there, and ask her to abandon everything and come live over here. Maybe she won't agree. Right? So what does Avram answer at that point? He says, all right, well, if that's the case, you know, don't take my son there, but, you know, you don't worry about it. You never take my son there. If she doesn't come, then you're lucky. You tried your best. What can you do? The same story that I just told you, Eliezer, the slave, then repeats to Lavan and Besuel. And he says to them, you know, Eved Avraham Anochi, I'm the slave of Avraham, etc. I came down, I saw your daughter and your sister Rivka, blah, 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 blah. And he says to them, and I told my master, you know, what if the daughter doesn't want to come with me? Should I bring the son there? And my master told me not to bring the son there. So on that pasuk, ulai lo tavo isha levo iti, right? He says it twice. When he repeats it again to Lavan, it's written with adavav. First time it's written with avav, ulai, alavav lamed yud. The second time it's written with adavav.
Where is it to Makara? Sorry.
The first time is pasuk hey, chavdal and hey. And the second time is Chaf Dalet.
Which word?
So the second time is Pasuk. I'm sorry. Lametet. Okay. Ulai written without a vav. Right? So ulai written without a vav can be read as not ulai, but rather
Elai
to me. So what does that mean? Rashi teaches us a very, very cryptic thing. Rashi tells us that you know what Eliezer was hoping? Eliezer had a daughter. And he was hoping that maybe, he could get his daughter to marry Yitzchak. That's why he said Elai. Maybe I could bring him to my house, Elai. Right? So even though he said Ulai, what he really meant was Elai. Maybe I can get my daughter to marry Yitzchak. Okay? But Avram answered him, no. You and I are never going to be in-laws. Right? You're Arur and I am Baruch. Right? My son is Baruch, you're Arur, it's not going to work. Here's the simple question that one needs to ask on this board. Right? The first time it says it with ulai. Ulai. Only the second time does it say elai. Right? Why is it that the Torah wrote elai the second time? Why didn't it write elai the first time when he's talking to Avraham? Right? Okay. Take it or leave it. This is the question of Rav Schwab. Rav Shimon Schwab answers the following. He says, the first time that he asked it, it was legit. It was a legit question. Avraham, what happens? Ulai lo telech acharai. Maybe she's not going to follow me. What should I do in that case? He's asking him for contingency plans. Do I do A, B, C? What should I do? Should I bring him there? Should I force her? Beat her over the head with a club and, you know, sling her over the neck? What should I do? Ulai lo telech. So there it's a legitimate question. But the second time, when he's repeating the story to Lavan and Besuel, that piece of the conversation is irrelevant. Why did he have to tell them that he told Avraham, what if she doesn't want to come and follow me? You know what's the reason why he would do something like that? He's planting the seeds. Maybe she won't want to come with me. You know, like you kind of plant an idea and somebody said, I'm thinking that maybe, like, you know how you look at your friend? I'm thinking that maybe there's going to be pizza in, you know, in the Malava Malka tonight. And you know your friend loves pizza. So he's like, you know what, I think maybe we should go to the Malava Malka. You're planting a seed. This is what Eliezer was doing. The second time, there was no reason to repeat that conversation with Avram of maybe she's not going to want to come. At this point, She's just about set to come. And then he says, and I told Avraham, what if she doesn't want to come? Hint, hint. Right? And that's why, right? That is the notion of, that is where we see Eliezer's motivation, that maybe he desired it for his own daughter. The first time it was legit. The second time it wasn't legit. Right? He was nogeya bedava. He had his own personal angle. Because he had his own personal angle, Avraham called him Arur. Right? What is the notion of Baruch as opposed to Arur? Baruch is a person that's able to do it without his own personal angle. Serve a Kaddish Baruch Hu for the sake of serving a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Listen to this. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Everyone's heard of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach? Mm-hmm. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was giant. Giant. He passed away in 1994. Oh, the stories we could tell about Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. He passed away before the time of internet, before the time of cell phones, and he had at his levaya, without the world saying everyone must come. You know, Rav Avadia Yosef, 800,000 was great, but everyone said there was press. Everyone has to come, and Shas was telling everyone has to come, and nobody told anyone they have to come to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's levaya. And you can get 300,000 people were there within. Right? And everyone, the crowd was not at all identical. You had the kippot srigot, the hats, the non-religious, everyone was at Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Anyway, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was a child, so he was very gifted, obviously. And he was learning in the yeshiva called Eitz Chaim. And in Eitz Chaim, they had a teacher whose name was Rav something Farb, maybe Goldfarb? But I'm not sure. Farbstein? Rav Farbstein or Goldfarb? I don't remember. I don't think so. Anyway, so he was a revolutionary mechanech. What made him revolutionary is that up until that point, most mechanechim, most teachers, when they would educate, the way they would do it is by rupturing the people over the knuckles. Let's say you didn't behave, they would hit your knuckles, they would hit you. Negative conditioning. Avoid all situations where... You know, Rav Goldfarb, Rav Farbstein... So he revolutionized teaching. He decided that rather than punish kids when they weren't good, he would reward them when they were good. And as such, he used to give them candy when they would do well. So Shlomo Zalman, the young Shlomo Zalman, every time he would do well on the test, which was all the time, he would say, if you don't mind, rather than go and buy me candy, would you mind giving me the lira that the candy would cost? The cash equivalent, whatever it was, Saving pennies. So as the Melamed thought, that's a little bit weird, but I guess, the good boy like Shlomo Zalman, he wants Sfarim, he probably doesn't need candy, he's probably saving all his money to buy Sfarim there, right? So he gave him the money. Kept on giving him money. And then at the end of the year, there was a big test, and then at the end of the test, the winner, the person with the highest score, or the top scores, would be getting Sfarim. Whatever it was at the time of, first edition, Mishnah Berurah was just coming out. Maybe it was Mishnah Berurah, maybe it was a Gemara, whatever it was. Something that he clearly did not have. And yet, amazingly, when Shlomo Zalman did well on the test, so he asked his Melamed, he asked the teacher, would you mind, I'd rather take the cash. So here he's like, I'd rather take the cash? What do you mean? This is farm. It's not candy. What are you going to take the cash for if not farm? So he thought, this is not good. I have a potential Talmud Chacham over here, but he has a certain love of money which could be detrimental to his long-term growth if he's too addicted to money. So he said to him, Shlomo, please tell me why you want the money. He says, no, I'd rather not tell. Please, I'd rather not tell. So finally he prevails upon his student and says, why do you want the money? And he tells him the following. He tells him, my mother is hard of hearing. And in the store, in the appliance store at the time it was, they have some sort of new device where it can increase a person's ability to hear. Basically a hearing aid, a primitive hearing aid. And he says, I'm trying to save up enough money to buy my mom the gift of hearing. Okay. Now, freeze frame that story. Fast forward about 30 years down the line. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Chelek Aleph of Mincha Shlomo, his Shavas and Shuvas, in Simon Tet, I believe, he gets asked whether or not a person can be Mekayim, the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah, with a hearing aid. Now, in order for you to understand, I promise you that our intellect combined does not come even close to Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. His knowledge of Torah surpasses, you know, even our wildest dreams and imagination. And if he wants to, he can find a way to manipulate the sources to say that you're Yotze. And let me tell you something else. He wants to. Because as much as it's hard for a 9-year-old son to give up all of his money and buy his mother a gift, you know, which is a tremendous, tremendous, we tend to be selfish at that age. As much as he wanted to give his mom the gift of hearing, I am absolutely certain that there's nothing he wanted more than to give his mom the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah. To be able to say that if you have a hearing aid, you're still yotze to the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah. And yet, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, with all of his ability, and with all of his desire to give it to his mom, he said, having looked at the sources, and having studied the technology, I do not think that you yotze the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah with the hearing aid. That's what his pesach is. Now, that is a tremendous milah. That is what you call to not bring your own personal baggage into your avodas Hashem. He could have done it, he could have manipulated it, but he wanted to do what's right for the sake of what's right, aliba de emes, not for the sake of his own personal negius. That is the difference between Eliezer. You know, he was a good guy. The Torah tells us, you know, so Torah tells us that he was Dola Umashka Mitoras Rabba. He was the senior slave. He was the person that spread Avraham's Torah. But still, he had a certain Nagia, he had a certain inclination towards, maybe I could get my daughter in. And it tainted it a little bit. When we serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu, we really have to try to do it like Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, with our own strengths, with our own personality, but not with our own negios, not by tainting that which we're responsible to do. Okay. Interesting to note, that Avraham Avinu asks Eliezer to make a shvua. Right? Ashbiecha b'Hashem Elokei HaShemayim. Pasuk Gimel. Chav Dalet Gimel. Why does he need to swear? Place your hand under my thigh, swear an oath. Right? Swear by God, the God of the heavens and the God of the earth, that you will not take away from my son from the daughters of Canaanites amongst whom I live. Why did he need a shvua? The senior staff member of Abraham's household. He's clearly earned this position through time and time again, proving his loyalty and proving his desire to please his master. Why is it that he needed a shvua? What was so critical over here? So here, we should become familiar with a principle which I think we all know, but we don't often think about. When we operate in the day-to-day life, don't give it our all. We do not give life our all. I'll give you an example. If right now I asked you to lift a very, very heavy log, you would try. And succeed, probably not, give up. If under that same heavy log, a member of your family was trapped, and if you did not get them out from under the log, you know, soon they would, chas v'shalom, pass away. Let's say, fire trapped under a heavy log in the fire. Then, likely, you would exhibit superhuman strength. The adrenaline in your body would be pumping. Everything, and you would be able to lift that same log. Right? Right now, you can run pretty fast. When you, on March 21st, is it? When you run in the Jerusalem Marathon for Shalva, for Yachad, for whoever it is that, you know, whatever you want to run for, when you run there, you know, there's going to be a certain amount of adrenaline pumping, and you'll run faster, your time will likely be better than any time that you've had during your practice run. Because there you feel, I got to give it my all. This is it. This is for the kids. I got it. You run faster. Somebody, I think, even said it in the video yesterday, they showed us for Shalva. You run faster when you feel like you're running for a cause. I think that was a quote that said some British girl from some seminary. She's made it to the Parsha Shir. So, this was what Avraham knew, and this is what all of us know, that sometimes we don't operate in full strength. Now, Avraham knew that over here, he was tasking Eliezer with a very, very difficult job. As we alluded to before, go to my home place, right, Ur Kasdim, and there, extract a girl from her family, ask her to leave everything behind, which means also convincing her parents and her siblings and all of her girlfriends that are going to be, oh, why are you going over there? Don't you like it? You know, convincing all of that, and then to bring it over, and that's a very, very hard task, right? It's like asking a person to lift a heavy log, and it's hard to lift that log. So it could be that Eliezer, after once or twice, would have given up. Right? Forget it. I tried. You know, Avram said, if I can't do it, then don't worry about it. I tried, but it was too hard. So Avram makes a shvuah. Right? He's asking him to swear so that he feels an extra obligation. His idea was over here to get his adrenaline pumping, if you will. He wanted him to feel that extra stress of, well, I really committed to this. He wanted him to feel the pressure so that he could perform at even higher levels of conviction in trying to get Rivka to leave her home and bring her to Yitzchak. That is why it says Vashbiacha. The Shvuah was meant to raise the stakes, right? Raise the stakes even higher so that he feels the pressure. And when he feels the pressure, he'll be able to perform even more and give it his all. And that's the lesson to all of us in general, that we should be aware. We do not operate at full power all the time. But we too, believe it or not, have been sworn to perform. When were we sworn to perform? Before we were born, the Malach comes to us and he says, you know, first he teaches us all the Torah, and then right before we exit, he says, okay, before you go, a couple of things we got to do. First of all, I got to do that man in black thing and put the thing over your eyes so you don't remember the Torah. Number one. Second of all, you got to make a promise to me. You got to swear to me. What do you have to swear? Swear to me that you'll be a tzaddik and not going to be a rasha. What's the point of that swear? The point of that swear, says Rav Moshe Wolfson, is the same as the swear over here. It is very, very hard to navigate your way in the world as a tzaddik. And therefore, the Malach wants to give us an extra push. It's not just that you're trying. It's that you swore to try. You made a commitment. So you really, really, really got to make it work. Work hard at it. And hopefully remembering that, learning that Gemara needed to tell us about that commitment, knowing that we made a commitment, that we're really committed to the idea, will help us and prod us and galvanize us towards really meeting the standards that HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects from us of tzidkus. I think we have time for one more. Yeah. Okay. The Torah tells us that Avraham. We'll go with the Avraham word. Although, really, people, if you have access to the Sefer Lekach Ve'Alibuv, Tavshin Samach, I really highly recommend reading his Sticha that he gave on Friday night that year in the year 2000, Tavshin Samach. Okay, Avraham, the Torah tells us, was Zaken Baba Yamim. Avraham was gaining on in years. And Hashem Berach es Avraham Bakol. And God blessed Avraham Bakol, with everything. What does Bakol mean, with everything? So what does Rashi say? Bakol. Bakol ole begimatria ben. Bakol means that he had a son. Right? Bakol bet is 2, chaf is 20, lamed is 30, 30 and 20 and 2 is 52. Ben, bet is 2, nun is 50, 52. Right, so that's the introduction. Since Abraham had a ben, so therefore he now had to tell Eliezer, go find a wife for my ben, for my son. Rav Moshe Feinstein asks a very simple question. He says to him, why did the Torah not just write, Avraham zaken ba bayamim, v'Hashem baraches Avraham beben? Why did it have to write Bakol? Why didn't it write Ben? Hashem blessed him with a son, and then why does it say Bakol? And you have to figure out, oh, the gematria of Kol means Ben, so that's the. Why didn't it just write Ben? Says Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal the following. He said, because sometimes you have family, and the family is part of your life. You know, yeah, I have family, and that's important, and I also have this, and that's important, but right, they're not the be-all and end-all of your life. What the Torah was trying to tell us over here is that as far as Avraham was concerned, Yitzchak was bakol. It was the be-all and end-all of everything that he did. Everything that he did was in order to ensure that Yitzchak would grow to be an Eved Hashem. Everything that he did was in order to ensure that the Jewish people would have strong roots and strong beginning. It was Bakol. It was everything to him. It wasn't just a Ben. It was everything to him. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, it would do us well, it would serve us well to keep that in mind as well. That we are a chain of Bakol. We come from our past, and we will hopefully also contribute to the future. And we have to look at that chain as being everything, the be-all and end-all. Bakol. It's not just, oh, it's a band party, you know, I have this and I have that. It's Bakol. It's the everything, the be-all and end-all of all that we have. All right. We'll stop here. We'll continue next week. Bezras Hashem.